Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Swing and a line drive, base hit right field.
Do you believe it, Howie Kendrick? Part two.
The celebration is on. The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
Gurriel at first, no balls, two strikes. Corbin fires. Swinging a tapper, third base side of the mound. Corbin off the hill has it. He gloves, he throws. He's out at first, and the side retired. Patrick Corbin has pitched two scoreless innings out of the bullpen, and he sends the World Series to the eighth inning.
As of right now, MLB is expected to start the season on time despite the coronavirus. Hello and welcome into a spring training is a bit too long edition of the Nationals Talk podcast. One of the heroes from Game 7, Patrick Corbin, joins the podcast today. And former Nats GM Jim Bowden explains mama drama to Todd. But first, starting right fielder Adam Eaton has missed basically a week due to a tight hamstring. Todd, when should Nats fans start getting concerned about his opening day availability?
Well, the team was off Monday, and there's a series of 1 p.m. games this week, a lot of them at home. You know, quote-unquote, there's a road game against Houston. So if you don't see him soon, then I would start to be concerned. Obviously, you're talking about a guy who's had leg problems in the past, and sometimes when you have those beget other problems in your legs. And also, he's been in the league almost a decade now, and these types of things happen. So hamstrings are naggy, as we know. And this is what kept Howie Kendrick from being ready opening day last year, if everyone can remember that. And if you don't see him soon, then I would start to certainly not panic, but assume that he may not be ready for opening day.
Yeah, hamstring injuries are generally just ominous, I think, especially when it comes to the Nationals and their history with them. But I think the general nature of baseball, the stop and start nature, makes it really tough to get a handle on those types of problems. And I've seen guys, you know, when I was covering the Nats, like Ryan Zimmerman, Wilson Ramos, Jason Worth, where it's like they're 100% and they've played a week at the big leagues, and then all of a sudden they hit a grounder in the infield and they have to exert themselves to run to first, and all of a sudden something goes wrong, and now all again, they're gone for a month or two. It's similar to like an oblique tweak that muscle, where I feel like even the smartest medical professionals in sports can only gauge it so accurately. I would say the good news is that the Nats might be deeper at Adam Eaton's position than anywhere else, right? With Andrew Stevenson and Michael A. Taylor waiting in the wings.
Well, that's my next question. Todd, if you had to pick between the two, who do you think would be the next man up to get the starting, to fill out the outfield? Let's just say Eaton's not playing opening day.
Yeah, I think it's pretty matchup-based with those two guys. So Michael A. Taylor, right-handed hitter, Andrew Stevenson, left-handed hitter, kind of similar players, you know, good defenders, athletic, fast. Michael A. Taylor played some right field at the start of spring training this year, and I asked him about that, and he said, you know, it was all the same to him, no matter what position he is in the outfield. So he's kind of comfortable out there. And, you know, this is what Andrew Stevenson does, is he's been a very good defender since his college days. If you ever hop on the YouTube and dump his name in there in LSU, you will see some ridiculous plays.
Like, I had heard of him before he came up to the big leagues. That's how good of a defensive college player
he
was.
He had a good year at the plate last year, and he's performed well as a pinch hitter. And as I said, he can run. So, you know, he might have been on the team anyway if they had space for him. But certainly, if Adam Eaton can't go, then both those guys will end up on the roster, and I would assume Davey Martinez will just match up with them.
Todd, let's play a game of true or false. Joe Ross is the fifth starter.
At this second, true. I'd keep it in pencil for now. We'll see what Austin Voth does the rest of the spring. But to me, what's true is both those guys are on the team, and Eric Fetty is going back to the minors, and that's more a numbers game than anything else. Obviously, Joe Ross has pitched well. Austin Voth has been all right, and Fetty has been pretty good and was pretty good the other day. But he has options, and those other guys don't. So there's your answer, more or less.
Yeah, I think it's entirely going to come down to options, because if you look at how they fared this spring, it's very close between the three of them. And Fetty and Ross in particular have thrown the exact amount of innings and have given up the exact same amount of runs. I am encouraged by Fetty striking out more batters. Remember, he wasn't a very high strikeout guy last year. But I think it's going to be, as long as all things are equal in terms of their performance, and maybe even if it isn't equal, strictly about options, as Todd just outlined.
Yeah, and it's always weird because you have the extra off days with opening day, you know, and both opening days you have those days off. So Joe Ross is, you know, looking at the schedule right now. His first start might not come until the weekend series at home against New York, or maybe even after that against Miami. Like, we might be 8, 9, 10, 11 games deep before he takes the mound. So maybe he starts and throws an inning or two out of the bullpen in New York to start the season. I mean,
you never need five starters to start a season.
Right, so you could be flexible on that front. We're going to get to Patrick Corbin in a second, who Todd sat down with. And Chase, if you could just matter-of-factly just update us on Patrick Corbin's weekend.
This is a factual statement, so I'll just state it. He went golfing with the president, along with several of his teammates, plus Jason Wirth.
We bring you the facts. Moving on. All right, discussion on Patrick Corbin. He is now entering year two here in D.C. Just, Chase, I'll start with you. I'm recycling a conversation point from last year as we shine a spotlight on Corbin. He is their third guy. Like, I just can't get over it at times. You know, I think the Nats got him for a bargain if you look back at that six-year, $140 million deal. When you look at how much money Zach Wheeler got, and Corbin's way better than Zach Wheeler. And so if you were to ask me, can the Nats repeat, I start with, well, Patrick Corbin's the number three starter.
Yeah, and as far as what we can expect going into this year, I mean, he's not your average number three starter, as you said. And one thing that stood out, you kind of put this question in the outline, like, what can we expect from him in year two with the Nationals? And I didn't realize, maybe it's because we were so focused on the postseason, just how identical his numbers were in 2019 to 2018, his last year with the Diamondbacks, and of course his first year with the Nationals. The Nationals signed him in free agency, so they had to project what he would be. And the odds of him being as close as he was statistically, I think have got to be very, very slim. So he threw in 2018 200 innings and made 33 starts. In 2019, he made 33 starts and threw 202 innings. He allowed 70 earned runs in 2018 and 73 in 2019. His ERA was it was a difference of 0.1. It's very hard to recreate success, especially as a pitcher, and to do it that identically is, I think, very, very unique. Now, I think the one question with him, and some people have asked it, and it's worth noting, is, okay, what happens after throwing a career high in innings last year? It wasn't just the 202 that was higher than the year before, but you add in the 23 and a third that he pitched in the postseason, and the way he pitched those innings, sometimes as a starter, sometimes as a reliever, using a appearance in a game as a bullpen session, stuff like that. But he's been a model of consistency the last 2 years, so I think you expect something similar.
He threw the only complete game for the Nationals last year. Do you have any idea when that complete game was?
It was in May.
It was in May, yes. It was that Saturday game of Memorial Day weekend against the Marlins, where everything changed, where I think you might know the record entering the weekend.
Yes.
Todd, I'm going to allow you to put on one of your favorite hats, even though I've never seen you wear a hat, your pitching nerd hat. And last year, you and I did a podcast after one game where Corbin started. He ended up getting a no decision and an extra inning loss in April against the Pirates. But can you explain the way, and I believe you used the word tunneling, the approach that Corbin has on the mound and the way he mixes speeds and pitches?
Yeah, this is one of the most interesting things to me when you get to like the professional sports level. And we're always talking about variations, right? Oh, this guy can do so many things, and that's what makes him elite at this point when he's playing with the other elite people. In this case, Patrick Corbin does essentially two things, maybe three, arguably. He throws a fastball and he throws a slider, And sometimes he throws a slower slider that registers as a curveball, but it's not actually a curveball. It's just slower. And so its arc and break changes a bit. But primarily, as most people know, he's fastball slider. He wants his slider to look just like his fastball. His fastball stays up. His slider dies at the back foot of right-handed hitters. And identifying it is extremely, extremely difficult for hitters because it looks the same for so long. If anyone follows Pitching Ninja on Twitter, you'll see some great examples of this when he does overlays. The fastball just at the last second, you know, the last 8 feet, say, stays level, and then the slider is just down in the dirt, and it's just a nightmare to handle. And the fact that it sounds simple, right, and that it's so repeatable for him, and that it just keeps working, as Chase outlined, his numbers last year were fantastic, just like the year before. It's a pretty amazing thing to watch in this age of video and adjustments and so much information and such a high level of talent. Well, you're still not hitting his slider if he throws it where he wants. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Tom,
kind of fun to watch, especially when he's cruising.
What award are you voting for this year? Do you know yet?
I don't know. We don't know that until well into the season.
Is he someone, if you had to give like your top 12, and don't stare at it too closely, but like, would you say mm-hmm. he's on the back end of guys that you could see winning a Cy Young, or am I putting him a little too high?
No, I think he can, because again, Chase quoted the workload. So that's 5 consecutive years of workload increase for Patrick Corbin since he was hurt. So the workload presumably is going to be there. He made 33 starts last year. In 6 of those, he allowed 4 or more runs. That means the other 27, obviously, 3 or fewer. So you take out like 2 of those, you know, and make those 2 earned runs instead of a 5 or 6 day, then you're talking sub 3 ERA, and you're talking, you know, 200 plus innings, and you're talking a bunch of strikeouts, and all these numbers start, you know, his whip would be down toward like 1-1 or down toward 1 even. And his strikeouts per 9 last year were 10.6, year before 11.1. I mean, those are hefty, hefty numbers.
Sure. I have to interrupt you.
Every chance.
That's a third starter who's averaging double digits strikeouts per 9 innings.
Yeah.
And how about this? You know, we're very strongly assuming now we're going to get Scherzer, DeGrom first game, opening day, and then probably Thor against Strasburg game 2. You're looking at game 3 on March 29, 1 o'clock, Stroman against Corbin. What a set of pitching matchups you have to open the season right there.
The third day is usually when you look around the league and be like, oh, wow, there's a huge drop-off.
Not in City Field that weekend.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's also funny for the personality contrast, too, like on-mound style, Stroman versus Corbin.
Certainly.
Stroman likes to strut a little bit, and and this will be the first time where his first start of the season will be in his hometown of New York, because remember, he got traded midseason last year.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to see a very vibrant and electric and strong personality from Marcus Stroman this season.
Definitely.
And I think Nats fans are going to be very sick of him if he pitches well on March 29th. Here now is Todd's conversation with Patrick Corbin. We'll be back on the other side. And yes, we will talk game 7 in Houston.
Corbin into the wind, the kick of the pitch, swinging a ground ball, chopped to third. Rendon has it. He sets, he throws, and a curly W's in the books. Patrick Corbin tosses the Nationals' first complete game of the year. A 4-hit shutout of the Miami Marlins, who are blank for a major league high 10th time this year.
So if a few years ago I told you to be on a team that went to the playoffs, and on the way to the World Series, you're constantly coming out of the bullpen, making a start here and there. This was 3-4 years ago when you were in Arizona and kind of coming back from injury, and I told you that scenario was in your future.
Uh-huh.
What would your reaction be to that idea?
I'd love it. Sounds great. I don't think it's ever going to get old coming in here and hearing that we're world champions, and it's great to be back here, see all the guys, and look back at really how special last season was.
And you talked about at the end how everybody was tired at that point. I mean, even us whining reporters were tired at that point. So what was more fatigued for you, your like legs and body, your arm, or your brain?
Maybe a combination of all that. I mean, just that whole month was very stressful, high leverage game situations, moments that can wear down on your body and like you said, mentally, just coming in every day. But I mean, that's what we love. We love those. You want to play in those games, and for me, just hey, I just wanted to be available, be ready to go, and I wouldn't change anything.
Was your preparation distinctly different when you were coming out of the bullpen? Like, I'm assuming Davey gave you a heads up, hey, in this segment, we're probably, you know, there's a shot for you to come in, and you had an idea of the guys who you're going to face. And obviously in a 7-game series, you get to see the same guys, so your scouting gets a little truncated. But anything majorly different?
Well, I skipped my bullpen, so right. I wasn't doing that. But I would warm up for it, like a start in the gym before and during the game, and usually head down to the bullpen around the fifth inning or so. The game seven was down there right away, just with being the last game. You have no idea what's going to happen. But I think one of the harder things, and especially for not pitching out of the bullpen too much, is trying to stay loose and make sure when your name's called, you can get ready to where you're able to go out there and do your job.
Do you think anything from that preparation is going to, like, you learn something from that preparation that you can use, even though, I mean, you'll be looking to make 32 starts during the course of this year?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully next year or this year do the same thing. Right. So, but, yeah, it's just, I mean, it was for sure different. But, I mean, these things happen in the postseason when there's only a handful of games left. You just try to be available. And we didn't have a lefty in the bullpen, too. So I always thought, especially that Dodgers series, that I could be a weapon that Davey could go to with some of their big lefties they have. But I don't know, this year just still coming in doing the same thing that I have, just trying to get ready, and we're getting there.
You're an upstate New York guy, Syracuse area. The temperament up there isn't a kind of like showy one, right? Like everybody's kind of, you deal with winter, and I don't know if laid back's the right term, but it's just like, it's not how it is, right? Like, it's not a Hollywood environment.
No.
Syracuse. And I say that as an upstate New York person myself, right? I'm not disparaging upstate New York. So when you went back there, but now you're World Series champion Patrick Corbin, and off of your big contract, is anything different there?
Not really. I mean, with my friends, it's all been the same, family, things like that. Did a couple charity events where maybe the crowds were a little bigger. There's maybe a little more excitement after the season that we did have as a team. But I only get the time to go back around Christmas and usually spend most of it with friends, family, and always enjoyed it. But nothing too big.
Yeah. Did you still need to take a honeymoon trip? Am I remembering that right? Did you ever take that?
Yeah, we went on a trip after after the couple days we spent in D.C. when after all the events we did. We went to Cabo for a little bit, and it was fun. We had a good time out there, got to enjoy ourselves, relax, and kind of do nothing, and which is what we wanted to do.
Right. I was going to say, pretty well-timed, right? You're doing that regardless at some point.
For sure.
Able to cash it in after a very exhausting season. The crux of what you do is kind of based on two pitches mostly, right? Like slider, fastball. So when you do your off-season work and think about refinements to your pitches or what you're doing, what do you focus on, if anything? Are you just trying to keep those as sharp as possible, or are you trying to add? What are you trying to...
Yeah, I think I want to be a little more consistent with my curveball this year, throw some more change-ups, things like that. But for me, each game's just kind of different when you're out there, so you try to just prepare and see what you need to use. But I usually, when I first come into spring, I like to, like you said, I like to get my slider down. I like to get my fastball command is the biggest thing. So, and feeling good, really, after each pen, just trying to feel good, kind of increase your workload and get ready to throw 200 plus innings this year, make every start. So that's always where my mind is.
And you segued right into my next question. Your workload has increased every year for the last 5 years since you were hurt. You know, you were like 85 innings, but now you're around 200 for three consecutive innings and career high 202 last year. What are you doing with your body to make sure that you're able to clock out 200 innings and the postseason?
Yeah, just staying on top of your conditioning, your arm care, things like that. I think that's always big. And then just being smart, like listen to your body. Sometimes you do need to back off a little bit, and sometimes you need to do more. So I think as a starter, for me, a great goal every year to come in is to make all your starts, make 33 plus starts. And when you can do that and be reliable every fifth day, it definitely helps out the team. It saves your bullpen. And when we have, when you have Max and Schross, the guys also that are doing similar things, and Sanchez as well, I mean, it just makes things a lot easier for us as a pitching staff.
Has the launch angle era changed how you pitch at all, either where you throw something or even when you throw it? Because everyone's trying to scoop?
Yeah, it seems nowadays there's more and more low ball hitters, where even when I, in 2012, came up, it was keep the ball down. And it seems like now you have to change eye level. You have to throw up in the zone at some point. You have to pitch to all four zones. And I think I've improved each and every year doing that. You always try to look for ways to get better, and still trying to master that.
And you mentioned, like, talking about last year never gets old, right? That's fun to think about and everything that you guys accomplished. And as we sit here talking, they're hanging a million signs around the park that say World Series champions. Mm-hmm. But when we talk to Davey and we talk to Riz and everybody, they're like, we got to start thinking about 2020 and move forward. So as a player, what's that process like for you of that was great and I still want to like taste everything that we did, but we need to get moving here in 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has the same mindset. It's the same thing coming in last year. We think we're going to have a competitive team out there that's going to be there late in the season, and we want to do it again. We know we won it last year, and we want to enjoy that and talk about it as much as we can, but we can also learn from it and get better, and guys here want to do it just as much. I mean, how sweet would back-to-back be?
Good job, Todd, there, sitting down with Corbin, two upstate New York guys, just chatting, just hanging out, so much in common.
I was surprised by that. I thought he's from Massachusetts.
you love that bit. You're driving that bit all you can. You're getting all the mileage you can out of that one. Chase, just a few things from last October with Corbin, because he had such an unusual role and really took on, you know, more of a role, more extra of a role than really anyone had from their regular season to postseason role. When you just look back on game seven, the three innings he pitched, innings six, seven, and eight, and that's exactly where the game turned and gave the bridge between Scherzer to Hudson in the ninth. Just sort of what are your memories from that evening in Houston, which I think is one of the more underrated parts from game seven?
Yeah, certainly. And it was a perfect microcosm of his role in October, right? He became this hybrid guy that Davey Martinez used to overcome what was not the best bullpen in the National League, I think it was safe to say. And he came in and tossed three innings, gave up two singles, but that was it. And it really stabilized the Nationals, and all of a sudden they started scoring runs. And we put so much attention and focus on starters and high leverage late inning relievers, closers. I know Todd Divis hates closers or the idea of it, but the role that he played in that game and throughout October as a bridge is often less heralded than it probably should be when you consider that all the innings and all the at-bats technically count the same. So I thought it was a perfect way for him to end October the way that he was so valuable for them along the way.
Yeah, it was 2-0 after five, and then scoreless between both teams in the sixth, and then I think anyone listening to this podcast kind of knows what happens in the seventh inning in the top of the seventh. Todd, when you were there, when you sort of saw it, did you, and especially after the Nats took the lead in the seventh and he had already thrown two innings, were you confident that he was going to stay in the game and keep it rolling?
Yeah, I mean, he was carving. I mean, he threw 44 pitches in the three innings. That's pretty effective, 28 strikes. So absolutely, I mean, they had gotten to that point of we're going to ride or die with these guys, you know, from the first round, from the first night against Milwaukee on. There was no reason to stop it in game seven and just keep going as far as you can with him and have, you know, Hudson Doolittle ready in your back pocket and figure out a way to get there. Exactly what they did. He was brilliant on the mound in Houston in game seven.
Chase, before we get to Jim Bowden, Todd's conversation with the former Nationals GM, one last thing on Corbin. If you had to give like your all October MVP, that's not how baseball does it. They go NLCS and then World Series, but would you have voted Corbin, or would Corbin have been one of your finalists, or would you have stuck with Strasburg?
Maybe a finalist, but I think Strasburg and Juan Soto, I think, definitely outshined everyone, at least in my estimation. Davey Martinez is also up there. And it's funny when you look back.
And Kendrick would have to be in that.
Kendrick would be in that conversation. Patrick Corbin had a 5.79 ERA in the postseason, but because there were some duds in there, right?
Yeah.
He had some uneven outings.
Mainly being at home against the Dodgers, where he threw in game three, two-thirds of an inning, and gave up six runs off four hits.
Right. Yeah. The value is certainly there. Maybe not the consistency of the other guys. Anytime you win a World Series, there's going to be a lot of guys who contribute, so it's generally going to be a tough decision to make. But I think his value was honestly more of a reflection of Davey Martinez, because it was Davey who had to get creative and compensate for the lack of a strong bullpen and do something that he hadn't really done all season, which is turn Patrick Corbin into this rubber arm hybrid pitcher.
And one thing that people might forget, not only did he pitch game seven, which of course they remember, and they remember he started game four, which wasn't a very effective start for him in D.C. on Saturday night, but he pitched game one in the sixth inning out of relief because Scherzer only went five innings in game one, and he only allowed one hit, didn't allow any runs. And at this point in time, the Nats had the lead and never gave it up, though Houston made it interesting, especially George Springer with a couple hits off the wall. Not sure if any trash cans were involved in those hits right there. But, Todd, I know this is more of a me and Chase thing as we look back at this kind of stuff. But if you were to have given your October MVP for the Nats, would he have been on it or would you have gone elsewhere?
Oh, man. I mean, it's so difficult. You know, I probably lean toward what Chase said and say Davey Martinez, just because they had to find a solution. Like, they settled on this idea before deploying it, right? So when it began to work, there's no reason not to continue it. However, you still have to kind of pull those levers at the right time and the right spots. And as we've talked about before, like when he brought in Steven Strasburg in the wild card game, some people thought Max Scherzer should have been out of that game much sooner. Davey Martinez kind of let him ride it out. There was a time when Corbin pitched five innings against St. Louis. He didn't pitch great, but he ate up to five innings and he struck out 12, logged those innings and put it away. And Davey Martinez left him out there to do that. So it's kind of those things that stand out to me. And just in Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, the stuff they did, presumably, you know, we're not going to see that again, barring those three precisely back into the postseason. But if you have a semi-viable bullpen, then you don't have to do that so much the next time around.
My favorite Patrick Corbin performance, other than Game 7, which is kind of legendary and is going to grow lore over time, was when he was a loogie in Game 2 in St. Louis. And he brought in two pitches, one out in the ninth before bringing in Doolittle.
In Game 4 against St. Louis too, right?
Game 4, he started against St. Louis.
Right.
And in Game 4...
And spotted a massive lead.
He was, and he fell apart at the end, but he had 12... He had like 10 strikeouts in like...
Yeah, that's the game I'm talking about. Yeah, five innings, 12 strikeouts, four earned.
The 1-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out with a slider, and that is 10 strikeouts in four innings for Patrick Corbin. His first career double-digit strikeout game in the postseason, and he retires the side, punching out three in the inning.
Yeah, I mean, he started out like on fire, and that's what, like, and the crowd was electric, and the 7-0 lead. It was an awesome evening. We're now going to transition to former Nationals GM Jim Bowden. We appreciate his time because of that. We've had Bowden on before. We're not going to focus on how it ended for Bowden in D.C. out of respect for him, but you certainly can look that up. On the bright side, he did draft Ryan Zimmerman, part of that brass, and he, which some people forget, he wasn't just the GM of the Nats. He really was a GM of the Expos right at the end and then came over with the team to Washington, D.C. Here now is Todd's conversation with Jim Bowden, including a new phrase I think we're going to drop randomly throughout the pod, Mama Drama. Here is that conversation. We'll be back on the other side.
Good evening once again, everybody, as the fans are coming to their feet. Vinny Castilla has creeped in out of the grass at third, and Brian Schneider is flashing signals. Here's the pitch, and the flashbulbs go off. It's in there, a called strike one. And time called. Levon Hernandez throws that ball across to Eddie Rodriguez, the Nationals bench coach. And that first pitch will be headed to Cooperstown, and the Hall of Fame as baseball is back in Washington.
We're here at spring training with Jim Bowden of CBS Sports, Sirius XM, of course, former general manager in the major leagues as well. When you look at the investigation, the Houston Astros, the response to the investigation, and kind of all the back and forth we've seen here at the start of spring training, what's your reaction to that thing on the whole?
Well, you know, I think that I had wished that the commissioner had made the decision to strip them of their world championship for cheating. You know, I understand why you can't suspend the players. I understand you have to negotiate with the union, and to get the truth, they had to give immunity. To get to the bottom of it, I think we all want to know the truth, which we appear that we've gotten at least most of the truth or a lot of the truth, enough truth. But I think that there's a lot of people that feel that justice isn't served when you get to keep on to that championship. So I feel that it just would be better if that could be stripped from them and have them return the trophy and the rings.
Some people take the stance there is no bad publicity. So there's been a lot of publicity for baseball here in the last month plus. What is your view of that as the public tries to digest the cheating scandal?
It's a black eye for baseball, and I don't agree with all publicity is good publicity. This isn't good for the game. It's bad for the game. And when you see the anger that takes place from the game's best player, Mike Trout, who never likes the limelight, and yet he feels necessary to come out and comment, and you hear the GMs and the managers, the fans, everyone that's covering the game and loving the game, I don't think anything positive comes out of it. I really don't. So it's unfortunate. You know, when the Nationals camp opened, the Astros camp opened, everyone was over at Astros camp covering them, not the world champions. This is the story right here in this ballpark. That's why I made sure that my first day of coverage was going to be the Nationals, because I want to cover baseball. I don't want to cover that controversy. And I am glad it's behind us. It's in 2017. And although the drama and the issue and everything surrounding it isn't going away anytime soon, we're going to still be talking about it in a month. The reality is I want to get on to 2020 and see if this Nationals team can repeat.
So let's get on to 2020 and this Nationals team. Bryce Harper leaves, Anthony Rendon leaves, and this year there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching for Davey Martinez to do, particularly in the infield. We know what the outfield is going to look like. We know their starting pitching is back. We believe their bullpen is better. How could it not be? So what's your view of what they've done, and when they try to figure out how to defend this title, where do you see them in the mix?
Well, the one thing we know is you win championships with pitching and defense, and the Nationals were able to keep Steven Strasburg and keep this four-man rotation together, which is as good as any in the National League. And we know with the hard work of Victor Robles and Juan Soto that the defense kept getting better and better on this team. So they've got those elements. And then the problem is, how do you replace the offense of Rendon? And that's not easy. You're not going to have a singular player do it. You have to do it as a team. But I believe that Trey Turner, Victor Robles, and Juan Soto, which is the trio nucleus of the future, are going to keep getting better. And I also believe, if managed properly, the veterans on this team will mix and match and put up numbers similar to what a star. Let's take first base as an example. I think if you take Eric Thames and Ryan Zimmerman and Kendrick and match them up properly, they've got a chance to put up the same type of numbers as some of the elite first basemen in the league. I really believe that. If Kaboom can be a Rookie of the Year candidate at third, if Starlin Castro can do what he did last year in a lineup that's going to have more traffic, I think this team will score enough runs.
And when you look at the National League, obviously Mookie Betts and David Price suddenly in L.A., they were very good anyway. Atlanta's going to be very good again. Philly may be better. The Mets always kind of who knows over there. In the Central, St. Louis, they're always seemingly there. What's your view of the league as a whole?
Well, I think you just pointed out facts of we've got more parity than we have in a long time. I mean, okay, the Nationals don't have Rendon, but okay, the Braves don't have Donaldson. So they both take kind of a step back. You mentioned Philadelphia. Adding Didi Gregorius and Zach Wheeler and Joe Girardi is going to help that team. The New York Mets are going to be healthier this year. They're going to be better. The Cardinals have come back. They're going to miss Marcell Ozuna. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The Cubs have lost Cole Hamels. John Lester's in decline. There's some questions there. The Reds are moving up. They may have the best starting rotation in that division. The Diamondbacks got better with Bumgarner and Starling Marte. They're much better than they were. So, yeah, we're going to have a fun league, not just because you're going to have the division races in the East and the Central, but the wild card race might be wilder than we've ever wilded before, maybe even a wild boar like Cespedes.
And that's a lot of wild. And speaking of the postseason, there's been a floated proposal of doubling the number of teams and a first-round bye. And the players I've talked to briefly about this, they are not interested in this idea, to put it politely. What's your view on expanding the playoffs?
I am 100% for it. I want to grow the game. I want revenue. I want more teams in a pennant race. I want more cities to care in mid-September. I think it's good for the game. You know, look, Major League Baseball has the deal with Fox through 2028 to cover the World Series, but the other TV and streaming deals are all up after 2021 when the CBA is up. How are you going to sell the TVs and maximize revenue? Well, you got to get Fox and ESPN and NBC. You got to get everyone jumping in there, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. We got to get the streaming rights, DAZN. So let's get more income. And you know what? Fans love the elimination games. Look at the wild card games and how many people watch those. Let's add more. What is wrong with that? And I know people say, well, I don't want it to be like the NHL or the NBA. Really? I mean, it's adding two teams in each league and having a short series, is that big of a deal? I think the players are missing it. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think baseball has to recognize attendance has gone down 7 years in a row. At some point, you got to understand the next generation wants more excitement. They want more mama drama. Let's bring them more mama drama. Let's go.
Thanks to Jim Bowden, who wants more mama drama. Catch him at The Athletic, Sirius XM, CBS.
Todd, I could tell that really tickled you a lot. What was going through your head when Jim dropped this, the good old mama drama on you right there?
probably the whole thing that goes through my head whenever I talk to him. He just got it out of my head when he dropped the Mama Drama line. He's an interesting character in our industry now and in the sport. You know, he's fun to talk to. He certainly is not short on things to say. He's not short on direct experience. And Nationals fans, as you said, Tim, at the top, recall what happened here and what did not and how his tenure concluded. So he's an interesting guy, to say the least.
Chase, did his argument sway you at all for expanded playoffs?
No, it didn't. Maybe if he went into more depth about adding more wildcard teams, I would listen. But I really think the playoff system is perfect the way it is.
Yeah.
I would maybe listen to a theory about, okay, adding more wildcard games, like a mini tournament or something. But I don't want longer series. I like the one-off type games. But Mama Drama wasn't the only thing that he said that was funny. Also, the wildcard race might be wilder than we've ever wilded before. It's hilarious. Also said he thinks the Astros should return their rings and their trophy, which is a pretty strong statement. But yeah, going back to him, it's funny that, you know, he still does these appearances and talks about the Nats, because even though his tenure here didn't go well, and he happens to be a Cowboys fan, which I generally would detest in somebody, I can't help but like the guy. I find him pretty likable.
By the way, Todd, I love the getup that you had that day. You looked very Florida chill. You had a nice short sleeve shirt on. You had the sunglasses on. You looked like you were in a happy place as you were interviewing Bowden.
There's a chance I had nice clothes in the workroom, and that interview kind of popped out of nowhere. And so that's what I was wearing. Otherwise,
I'm not mocking. I'm saying you looked great. You looked very West Palm. You looked like you're ready to go hang out down in Palm Beach County.
Sun's out, guns out, Tim, you know.
I will say this. He didn't sway me at all with the expanded playoffs. He honestly sounded like an owner. Like, hey, we get more money. Look at this. How great is that? Which doesn't do anything for me personally. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I'm for the playoffs if you want to cut the season down. You want to make it 144? I'm all ears.
I would agree, yeah.
But if you're going to keep it 162, which is unbelievably long and over 6 months and all of that, I'm not interested in adding teams.
Yeah, the postseason isn't the problem. And I think we all like how it's contained in October. It's cool. It only lasts 1 month.
Yeah, right. And another thing as well, this hasn't really been brought up, you know, as it is baseball. So like they're starting because of the expanded playoffs, like we're starting the opening day, March 26th this year, which is not warm in places up north, including mm-hmm. here. It's probably going to be cold up in Citi Field. And then late October, you know, we've seen the World Series in Fenway Park and whatever, and Wrigley, it gets very, very cold. Like, there isn't enough time in the warm weather calendar as it is. So if you add rounds, I don't know when you're planning on playing these games unless you want to have the Dodgers or Padres hosting it. I feel like people have missed that element as well when it comes to the expanded playoffs. I hope it doesn't happen. But if I had to guess, it will, because capitalism is capitalism.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's an interesting argument that if there's more cities that are involved in September, then maybe there's more interest. But yeah. I'm not sure it would overall expand interest in the league that much.
Yeah, I just think, like, if in the meeting, if someone says, yo, owners, you're going to make more money, like, I just don't see how that gets shut down.
Well, that's true.
That's my fear with it. All right, time to wrap up. We'll be back with you later on this week. Parting shot, Todd, we start with you. Got anything for us?
I was just thrilled to be on an outdoor basketball court on Monday when it was extremely, extremely nice out. So that plus daylight savings time, the idiocy of that is over for another year. Feeling good about moving forward here, Tim.
Another year?
Sunshine.
Do you watch Veep?
Yeah. Half a year.
Todd, did you watch it?
No.
One of the characters like had a whole thing about, he basically shut down the government over, he was in Congress, over daylight savings. It was a great thing.
Mr. Speaker. Daylight saving, not plural, time, has never saved us from anything.
Best of luck to your Bonnies. They're playing 2:30 on Thursday on NBC Sports Network up in the A-10 tournament. I will be rooting for them in your honor.
Watch out for them. Watch out for them next year, Tim, because I bet you Thursday starting five is going to be three sophomores and two freshmen. And somehow their awesome coach has turned them into a reputable bunch this season. We thought it was going to be like a 12-win situation, but they turned out to be pretty good, and next year will be a whole season of taking names, etc.
Yeah, if they win, they play St. Louis on Friday, so they gotta win four games to get in. It's a long road ahead, but I will be cheering for the Bonners for you.
By the way, there might be no greater joy as a sports fan than rooting for a college basketball team that overachieves?
Oh, it's well, I'm going to get to that in a second. Chase, your parting shot.
Because, like, I mean, you just watch these guys grow, like, before your eyes. It's awesome.
As I said, that's a hint to my parting shot. Yeah.
And we could tie that, we could contrast that with Maryland and also my alma mater, College of Charleston. My parting shot, first of all, Luis Garcia has been putting up some interesting numbers in spring. He's got more hits than anyone still on the Nationals. Find it interesting. Maybe the timeline's going to speed up a little bit for him. But lastly...
Which I'm all for, by the way.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I think maybe some Nats fans haven't noticed yet. But my parting shot is I just found out about this restaurant in Northeast D.C. called Cali Burger. Have you guys heard of it?
Not familiar with it.
So, have you ever had In-N-Out?
Yeah, a few times. Yeah.
So, like, apparently someone just, like, completely and blatantly, like, ripped off the business model. Like, the menu's the same. It's called Cali Burger. The cups look the same. Like, all the branding looks the same.
Okay.
Instead of animal style, it's Cali style. It's everything is the same. And I, like, the Washington Post has written articles about how, like, it's a complete knockoff and, like, unabashedly. I haven't tried it yet, but I plan to maybe like later this week. But I find it fascinating because there's a lot of people in this area who love In-N-Out Burger but can't get it. And this is like a very, very close equivalent. And that's why that's what they're trying to do. Yeah. Now, apparently it's not as good. I've read like articles from people who are from California. They're like, it's not as good, but if you're really craving it, that's fine. But what it reminds me of is like the video game Grand Theft Auto, when like they don't have the copyright for something, but they make something that's so similar to the point where it's a joke in itself, is like Cali Burger instead of In-N-Out would be something you would see in a video game or something. Like
when they ripped off, in what was it, GTA 4, they ripped off, why am I blanking on the Pacino movie?
Scarface?
Yeah, when they totally ripped it off.
Right. So I'm going to try it. I'll report back.
All right, sounds good. It's in Noma, right by Wonder Garden, right by the Metro. So next time I'm out there, it's been a while, but I will keep that in mind. Appreciate the heads up. Just real quick, have you guys ever been to DC Improv before in DuPont
Many
Circle?
Many times.
All right, I finally went. So finally went on Saturday night. Wife and I saw Michelle Wolf.
Yeah, I was going to say, she was just there.
Oh, yeah, you're on top of it. She's workshopping some new material, so it wasn't at her best. I've seen her before in New York. Like, I never heard of her before. I saw her at the Comedy Cellar. She was incredible. Caught her on an off night, but, you know, it's okay. Like, as Todd said, Patrick Corbin had 6 starts last year. We allowed 4 more runs, so...
It was probably, like, $20 or something, right?
Yeah, that was one of those where, like, the wife booked it, and so in my mind it
but
was...
But the improv is never expensive there.
Right, but it was, like, free because she paid... the bill, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, obviously I'm paying for it or we're splitting it, but in my head I had a free evening, if that makes any financial sense whatsoever. And then lastly, you mentioned college basketball. So I know college basketball to many people is a 1 month sport, and it's certainly the last few years have been real rough for the sport. When the term FBI is mentioned almost more often than any other player, it's been a rough time. However, I follow Wisconsin day in and day out, and they aren't that good this year, and it looked like they were going to make the tournament literally as of a month ago, and then they won 8 straight and won a share of the Big Ten title and capped it off by winning at Indiana. It was an awesome win, and it's been a really difficult year off the court for the program. You can look it up if you're interested. Point is that like it was just one of those like awesome college basketball moments. Like the videos, it was just a bunch of 19, 20-year-old kids that overachieved, and it was just a lot of fun. It was like, this is why I watch college basketball on Tuesday nights in December. You know, so there is a world out there for people who don't just want to follow the sport for 1 month out of the year. And it was really, really cool. Like, it was a conference title that came out of nowhere. The Big Ten is the best conference this year. And as I said, like, Wisconsin 3 weeks ago was the 8 seed. And then they ended up tying Michigan State and Maryland. I mean, just total nutso. So that was a super fun way to start off my weekend.
Maryland's good, by the way.
They are. They're inconsistent. I wouldn't be surprised if Maryland made a run to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You got a senior point guard in Cowan. You got a guy in Sticks who was a matchup nightmare for most teams. I could very well see them rattling off 4 wins.
And Atlanta's where they won in
0-2. Yes, that is very true. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back later on this week. We are going to give you Todd's interview with Adam Eaton. We'll have an update on Adam Eaton as well on that one, and maybe have something else planned for you. And, so we're going to keep it rolling. I know you guys are anxious for opening day. We're just as antsy as you are. Trust me. But have a great rest of your week, everyone.
Now the pitch belted to right center field by Corbin. That's going to get down and roll all the way to the wall. Rounding third is Gomes. He'll come in to score. Corbin cruising into second as he snaps his 0-for-43 with his first double of the year and his third run batted in. It's now the Nationals 9 and the Pirates nothing.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.